soul. Some poor devil is in direst torment.
Lori appeared by the door, fully dressed.
Torture. Heard it starting and get up to see what is going on. The Sekhmen.
Jack was last to rise, struggling with the greatest difficulty to pull on his camouflage jacket.
Shots torture?
Ryan tugged on his high, steel-capped combat boots and picked up the G-12 from the side of the bed.
Oh, yeah. Lori's right. You never forget a sound like that one.
The whole of the Mescalero tribe was there, surrounding the banked fires. The walls of the canyon seemed to glow with the vivid colors of red and deep yellow, highlighting the flaws and faults in the rocks. Above the lingering tastes of the evening's meal, they could all catch the elusive, unforgettable smell of burned flesh. Jack was at Ryan's elbow as they walked down the gentle slope, past the area of blackened grass where the oil had been torched.
You going to talk, Cuchillo?
I don't know, Jack. You think it's a good idea taking them both along?
Think love her, Ryan.
Maybe, son, maybe. We'll talk a little later. Let's find out what's...
The words trailed away as the crowd opened up to give the honored visitors a good view of the people's celebration of their victory. Cuchillo Oro had his golden knife in his hand, and he waved it above his head to welcome them.
Come, brothers and sisters. Join us in honoring our enemies. Come, son-to-be.
The chief beckoned Jack to sit by him. Next to steps lightly Moon. Christy grabbed Ryan by the arm.
Leave it, lover. Come back to the hut.
Ryan saw a towering shadow move a little to their right, away from the fires. It was the shaman.
Listen to her, One-Eye Chills.
No. Gotta see. It might help me make a decision on something.
The dazzling light of the fires and the movement of the crowd still obscured the center of the attention. The screaming hadn't come again. Doc was hesitating with Lori on his arm. Ryan turned to the old man.
Take Lori and Christy back to the wiki up, Doc. No reason for them to see this.
Nor I, truth be told.
Doc led the two girls away from the fire, back into the shadows beneath the cliffs. Ryan, with Jack and JB, stepped forward to join the Mescalero. Cuchillo Oro stood and embraced them all, hugging them and clapping them on the shoulders. Ryan could easily catch the rancid taste of stale alcohol in the chief's breath.
Our Anglo brothers honor us. As a token of my love for them, I give the golden knife of my great forefather, Cuchillo Oro, to Eyes of Wolf, that he may carry it all his days with us in honor.
He'll ask for it back from your young men in the morning when he's sobered up.
The albino hesitated, then reached out and took the beautiful antique cincada, clasping his long pale fingers around the jewel-studded hilt, feeling the fine balance of the blade. He nodded his thanks to the chief.
Carry on, my people! Come, One-Eyed Chills, and see how the enemies of the people come to pay their price. Two have already joined their spirits.
Cuchillo Oro stumbled, spilling liquor from the earthenware jug in his hand. Ryan noticed that most of the tribe seemed to be thoroughly drunk.
The women were clumsy and did their work too fast, but the others will last longer.
What hung on the two farthest stakes bore little resemblance to human beings. Ryan could make out where the skulls were and where the limbs had been, but to the casual glance, the corpses looked only like ragged carcasses of scorched meat from some totally unidentifiable creatures. Sergeant McLaughlin was nearest to them. Then came the last two of Court Strasser's private cavalry. Each helpless man was surrounded by a dozen busy women, ranging in age from young girls to white-haired grandmothers. Torturing was mainly women's work.
This fare turns my stomach. I'll be in the hut if you need me.
He half-turned, then came back, gripping Ryan's arm just above the elbow, with fingers as tight as steel clamps.
Don't try to come between them on this ground. One wrong word and we're all dead. Or tied along with those poor bastards. Let it be, Ryan, for tonight.
The armorer spun on his heel and strode away from the fires. Ryan could feel that Jack was trembling.
Jibby's right. Stay real careful, kid.
Wanna go, Ryan. Throw up soon. This real bad. Listen, I've gotta go.
The boy also swung around, darting quickly up the hill after the retreating figure of JB. The golden knife glittered in Jack's belt. Steps Lightly Moon looked as if she wanted to go after him, but her father stopped her.
Why do your friends leave? Do they wish to insult the people?
Of course not, Kuchiyoro. They are very tired, and they do not wish to intrude on the sport of the people.
Breath stirred his ear, and Ryan barely caught the faint whisper of the shaman.
Wise answer, my brother. It keeps your heart within your body, and your eyes in their sockets.
But you will watch when I chills?
Of course, Kuchiyoro. I am honored.
Good! Go, Steps Lightly Moon. Show the old friend of your husband to be of your skill in giving honor to an enemy.
The girl dropped a hasty curtsy to her father and to Ryan. She drew a small flensing knife from her belt and ran to the nearest captive. The next 2 hours passed for Ryan in a blur of revulsion. The women had used the living flesh of the first set man to demonstrate their skill at sewing and embroidering beads. As he had strained against the ropes, they had covered the skin of his chest, upper arms, and thighs with intricate patterns, piercing his genitals hundreds of times with the small needles as they sewed on dozens of tiny colored plastic beads. The trooper's tongue had been hacked off, and his mouth filled with suffocating wads of cloth. To stop him from trying to claw at the woman, they had simply cut off all his fingers and thumbs, cauterizing the bleeding stumps with burning twigs from the fire. When one of them completed a particularly attractive piece of sewing, all of the women would stop and praise it, giggling with delight. One of the older women kept rubbing her hands over the beads, tugging at them, causing the wretched prisoner the most exquisite agony. Once there was no more flesh uncovered, Kuchiyoro gave them his permission to kill the man. Ryan watched, face set like granite, as Steps Lightly Moon begged for the honor. Her father smiled benevolently. She began to dance in front of the man, caressing her breasts through her dress, lifting it to show him her smooth, bronzed thighs, touching herself and smiling as she moved closer to him. Ryan fought to steady his own breathing as he saw the Sek man, despite the horror of his own situation, begin to show visible signs of arousal. The pain as the sewn threads tightened was beyond imagination. The girl drew her little knife again, lifting her hand to touch it to the wide, staring eyes of the cavalryman. Two of the women joined her and held his head steady while she probed with the point of the knife, lifting both eyes from their sockets. Ryan thought of the whispered warning of the shaman, feeling his gorge rising at the way the Apaches were taking such gloating pleasure in the destruction of a human being. Whatever the cause, it was too much. Ryan felt the arm of Kuchiyoro sprawl across his shoulders, and he barely won the battle not to pull away.
I would have made their suffering longer, my friend. Perhaps we keep the three-stripe man for that. We blind him and cut out his tongue, cut off his ears and his nose, hack away his balls and cock, but take care to stop him bleeding to death. Hamstring him by cutting tendons at knees and elbows. Then everyone in the tribe can use him for what they wish. He can be beast to carry and to be whipped, or target for children's arrows. We can use him for seat, or for many things. He can live for our laughter for many moons if we care for him.
Ryan saw that Sergeant McLaughlin had hurt him. The non-com's body streamed with drying blood from dozens of small cuts, but apart from that, he wasn't harmed. He wasn't even gagged. His eyes met Ryan's eye, filled with a mute appeal. Ryan looked away. Steps Lightly Moon soon won the praise of her father for finally killing the Sek man she was torturing. She had taken a barbed hunting arrow, inserting it between the trooper's spread thighs. She pushed it an inch or so higher, then twisted it and pulled it out. The man wrenched so hard at the ropes that for a moment it seemed he would break free. But the girl was quicker than the rest, ramming the long arrow its length into the man, clear to the flights. The white man shuddered once and died. After innumerable humiliating and painful tortures, the second Sek man was given a rapid and spectacular passing. The women made dozens upon dozens of narrow cuts all over his body, each one sliced down to form a tiny pocket. From his forehead, over his cheeks and neck, across his chest and stomach, around his genitals, all the way to his ankles. Then, each cut was carefully filled with coarse grains of black powder from old rifle cartridges. A wizened woman took a burning branch from the fire and handed it to Cuchillo Oro, who nearly dropped it. Recovering, he offered the torch to Ryan.
Send him to his maker below the earth, my brother.
No thanks, Cuchillo Oro. You won the victory. You chill him.
It had been a close call. Straining, Ryan's buried vein of uncontrollable rage. For a moment, his hand had reached for the torch, wanting to thrust it into the chief's face. The Mescalero stood up, staggering a little, waving the torch to and fro to make it burn more brightly. He approached the now silent-bound man, who slumped in the ropes. The suffering and the terror had caused the Sekhmet to lose control of both his bowels and his bladder.
It's nearly done, Harry, old bucko!
The flaming branch was passed quickly across the surface of the trooper's body, igniting the pockets of black powder. Every inch of flesh exploded in glowing fire, the night filling with the overpowering stench of cordite and roasted meat. Cuchillo Oro passed a mug of fiery liquor to Ryan, urging him to drink. Fighting the desire to vomit, Ryan drained three mouthfuls, feeling the alcohol burn its way down his throat into his stomach. He handed the mug back to the chief. Cuchillo Oro held out the mug for one of the women to refill.
Now we drink more!
I'm gut-weary, chief. Gotta hit the bed.
Sure. Sure you have. Last of the pony soldiers will be there tomorrow for some more laughing. And all that. Sleep well, my brother.
Yeah, and you.
Ryan picked his way between the Mescalero toward the wiki-up. As he neared it, he was suddenly aware of the shaman again at his elbow.
You did well. There are times when it is harder to sit still than to stand and fight.
Ryan paused, looking up at the serious face of the wise man, trying to see the eyes behind the glasses.
Yeah. Wouldn't have saved those poor sons of bitches. It would have done in all of us.
Yes. It is as well you seek to know that this has always been their way. Always the Apache has suffered at the hands of others. Cruelty breeds cruelty, when I chills.
The name is Ryan Carter, and don't forget it. I know you speak the truth, man whose eyes see more, but that sure as hell doesn't make me like it.
No. May your night be good, my brother.
Thanks.
Ryan?
What?
I see your heart. Take care, and move early and fast.
I'll do that. We won't meet again, my brother. I thank you for everything.
The shaman didn't reply, staring at Ryan for a moment, then moving silently down the hill. The last Ryan saw of him was the distant gleam of the torture fires reflected off the mirrored glasses. The dawn wind drove thin gray skeins of smoke around the bowl of the canyon from the embers of the cooking and torture fires of the long night. The canvas flap across the front of one of the wiki-ups fluttered, where it hadn't been properly laced shut by one of the drunken occupants. Ryan led his five friends down the slope from their hut toward the five stark torture stakes. Four of the five carried a corpse. The fifth one had the naked body of Sergeant Sean McLaughlin tied tightly to it. His head was sunk on his chest, and the whole of his torso was covered with black threads of blood. Since Ryan had seen him, someone had smashed both of the Sekhmet's knees so that they were swollen and bloody, with sharp bones showing whitely through. A heavy picket iron had also been hammered into the wood, through the soft skin of McLaughlin's genitals.
He's gone.
No, I think not. See, his chest is still rising and falling. Oh, by the three Kennedys, but the Lord Almighty should send a murrain upon this place. They are as bad as Stresser and his brood.
Though hushed, the old man's voice was enough to drag the non-com back into a sort of consciousness. McLaughlin's mouth was filled with a crude hemp gag, but the eyes flickered open, turning to where Ryan and the other five stood, looking at him. They carried their blasters with them, as well as canteens of water and some dried food.
You can't leave him, lover. You can't.
Can't take with us.
It's true. Not with his legs broke like that. The man's near done.
Last night, when you told us all that happened here, you said they threatened to keep him alive for weeks. You said Cuchillo boasted about what they could do to their prisoner.
Yeah, I know, Christy. I know.
Make a noise and we wake the camp. If Fire a blaster and we're all chilled meat.
McLaughlin was moving his head slowly from side to side, listening to their quiet words, blinking his eyes as if he were trying to send a message to Ryan.
Take his gag out, Jack.
But Ryan, he can betray us if we do.
Do it, Jack. Time's wasting.